sound is.
Nick, the rains are back with a vengeance here in Sydney again, aren't they?
Tom, it's a bit of a joke, isn't it? I'm sick of this rain. We got ripped off. We have no summer this season.
There was 2 days of good weather there for, you know, just a couple of days. We were all outside. We were getting a little bit of vitamin D, and then all of a sudden it's all back to this again. What did we do to deserve it?
Yeah, I don't know. It was actually quite funny. I actually sent you a text. It was like, Tom, the sun's out.
Yeah.
Do you want to catch up? And you said, F yeah. You were there in 2 minutes.
Couldn't get out of the house quick enough. How you been?
Yeah, been really good, actually. Yeah, I'm really excited about this show today, actually.
It is a good one.
I've been doing my stretches.
Have you? Are you expecting to cop a bit of a beating today, do you?
No. I'll hopefully I'm not going to be a guinea pig today, yeah. But you look like a good guinea pig.
Mate, I've been kicked around a little bit by one of our guests, a very long time ago. We'll see what happens tonight. Who knows? It might end up in a brawl after a few was.
All I know is, Tom, I'm going to agree with everything they say.
I agree. Well, look, we are going to change the pace a little bit today because we're going to be talking about something really interesting, a sport called Bagration, aren't we, Nick?
We are. Very interesting. A lot of people may know the form of it today as another martial art that we see quite often, but they didn't know the origins of it.
The expression that a lot of people use is that this sport was the ancient Greek version of the UFC. What do you think about that one?
I think it's a pretty fair analogy, but we've got a couple of experts that will able to break that down for us.
Absolutely. So, as Nick said, we need some experts in the room to discuss this one because we're not really up to date on all the fighting stuff, unfortunately. There's likely no two better people in the world right now to talk about Bagration than the two gentlemen in the room with us. They're probably too humble to admit it. Both gentlemen have practiced Bagration for decades, have won Australian and world championships in competitions, and are successful coaches of the form, including other forms of martial arts as well, in their own right are quite successful with their own gyms, Fight Lab, and Zeus Academy. And Nick, would you believe they're from right here in Sydney?
All the greatest Greeks are in Sydney.
They are.
Dare I say that?
And not too far from us either. So first cab off the rank is the great Con Pappy, who has won, as I said previously, state, national, and world titles in freestyle wrestling, Greco-Roman wrestling, sambo, sumo, no-gi grappling, jiu-jitsu, and karate. Con's also won world championship titles for veterans in sport, including for Bagration. And next to him as well is Costa Prasoulas. Costa's the Zeus Academy's master instructor with over 38 years of martial arts experience. Having trained, taught, and competed within Australia and overseas, Costa has instructed security and law enforcement personnel, conducted children's and women's confidence, self-esteem, and self-defense seminars, and has been 3-time Australian and intercontinental champion. Costa is internationally certified and accredited in Muay Thai, Hapkido, Taekwondo, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and of course, Bagration. He's also a working actor, would you believe? Gentlemen, welcome to Uzo Talk. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you for the invite.
Thank
nice
you for
to
being
be here with you guys.
Welcome, boys. Thank
you. We do feel intimidated, don't we?
We do. I'm actually socially distancing.
We had a little bit of a fight out here before, didn't we, Nick?
Oh, my God.
Not you and I.
No,
your boys.
No, my boys. They, as soon as I found out we're doing a story on pancreation, they put the gloves on and they're at it. You know, and they're building the shit out of each other and I'm getting the shits. Yeah, boys, stop. Get out of here. We're trying to set up. But no.
It was good fun.
It
all
was.
In good fun. Well, look. Yeah, it is. I think we should get into the episode properly. What do you reckon, Nick?
I think so, mate. Looking forward to this.
Time for a drink.
Let's drink.
Siniyamas, Bediath. Thank you for being here.
Jeez, boys.
Thanks for having us.
No worries.
Nick, what are we drinking today?
Tom, dare I say, we are back in episode 10. We've done a full circle. We're back to Plumari.
We are indeed.
Where we all started from.
Absolutely. And it's a good drop, isn't it?
It is. I missed the Plumari.
It's been a while since we had it. And the second that we poured it, it was just like, this feels right. That first taste.
Tom, we're reminiscing. This is how we all started way back in episode 1.
All those months ago.
All those 6 months ago. I feel like a lifetime ago.
I know.
Yeah, no, I'm really enjoying this actually. And it beats our last episode, which was done in the morning with a double shot piccolo.
Not going to recommend us do that again.
Yeah, that was tough. That was tough. I'm actually really enjoying this one. The Uzo Blumari's going down a treat.
Yeah. What about you, gentlemen? Are you enjoying your ouzo? Do you normally partake?
Depending on the circumstance in this environment, it's actually fantastic. I'm to be honest with you, I don't have as much ouzo as I should.
As you should.
But yeah. This is actually quite good. I'm actually really, really enjoying this drop. And it's got a nice... it doesn't have that real burn after effect either. It's quite smooth. I like it.
Yeah, good.
What about you, Con?
I like drinking ouzo when I'm in Greece.
Yeah.
I like to get into the, like drinking tequila if I'm in Mexico. I just have a drink for every country.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not particularly a drinker. I enjoy a glass of red every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the show, the drink, it's all perfect. It's in good.
It's good harmony.
Balance right now.
That's so we're talking about this before. So how do you take your ouzo, Con?
With water.
With water and no ice.
My grandmother told me, who lived to 103 years old,
103.
Smoking rollies.
Wow.
She said, it's wrong to put ice in ouzo. It's un-Greek.
Wow.
Wow, un-Greek. Okay.
Yes.
Man, we've been doing it all wrong.
Yeah, but my grandmother thought, ouzo, you got a toothache, you got a headache, ouzo. You don't feel good, ouzo. You feel
that.
Good, ouzo.
Yeah.
There's no reason to roll ouzo.
Yeah.
Like the old ouzo rollers, right?
That's right.
All that sort of older generation always have their go-to product. For my AR, it's Vaseline. Again, my big fat Greek wedding, you know, the thing with the Windex.
Oh, yes.
Our thing in our family was Vaseline.
Okay.
For everything.
No, we had Cipro.
Yeah.
Everything got killed with a Cipro.
Yeah.
Toothache, if you had
ouzo.
Ulcers. Yeah, we had a Cipro.
Verduzes.
But the Cipro came from
Tupro as well.
Yeah,
Tupro
as well. Classic.
Verduzes should be child abuse, you know, that those cups on your back is just...
Oh, man.
I remember as a kid, my grandmother putting these cups on my back and they'll get rid of the flu.
Yeah.
And it was just, you do anything.
Yeah, but you know, they pay $100 a session for that now.
Yes, they do.
Supreme athletes.
It's actually quite interesting. One of my students the other week came up to me and said, Professor, I got this brand new thing called cupping done.
The fact that the Greeks have been doing it 3,000 before Christ is...
Yes.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I used to watch that in my own household. My mum used to grab a cup and she used to use methylated spirits.
The fork with the fire.
Yeah, with the cotton bud. That's right. Put it on my dad's back and you'd watch it swell up and then she'd struggle trying to peel it off. Yes.
And there were some people who also did the bleeding thing as well. They'd get the razor blades and, you know, start putting nicks in your back as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Never heard of that.
My uncle's got marks all over his back from that.
The interesting thing with this is a lot of the times that actually healed and fixed the problem. So
well, from the pain you forgot your problem.
Yeah. Well, there's that too. Natural therapy.
That's it.
I'll stick to Cipro.
Yeah, that's it. Well, boys, we ask everyone who comes on the show, what are your Greek credentials? Where are you boys actually from? Maybe start with yourself, Con.
My father's from the Peloponnese, and my mum is actually from Crete. But I think my grandfather did something dodgy and had to leave Crete and move to Nafplio and never went back. He wasn't even buried there. You know, the Cretans have got these vendettas. The donkey ate my marouli. So we're going to shoot you and sort of things. So my mum's, roots were actually from Crete. She was born in Nafplio. My dad's from Aeon, which is a city close to Patra. And, of course, they came to Australia. They met, they got married here. And like all the real Greeks, they all lived in Marrickville.
Yeah,
the real Greeks, hey?
The real Greeks that have been here 30, 40 years. And
I'm still there, bro.
I'm
still there.
That's right. Connie's holding the flag.
That's it.
Yeah.
There's heaps. It's officially called Little Greece now in some
Little sort. Athens.
Little Athens. Little,
that's correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
Although they are dropping, all those people used to hang around the post office there. Mm. They're going to meet their maker, a lot of them.
Mm. Yeah, there you go.
Jeez. What about yourself, Costa?
I was born here in Sydney. My dad is originally from Naupactos, close to the ancient temple of Delphi, temple of Apollo, the oracle there, which is a famous historical site. And my mum is from the Peloponnese, from Pyrgos. So I hold from both Stereo Ellada and Peloponnesio. And they kind of like met here, they got married here and I was born here. But I've been to Greece many times. I actually lived there for quite a number of years.
When right.
I used to compete, especially in kickboxing. Yeah, I have close ties with Greece. There's something different, you know, when you land,
absolutely,
you feel at home.
it's the greatest thrill arriving, and it's the worst, you know, it's the worst dread coming back, isn't it? And you know, everyone talks about that depression they go into when they come back here.
Definitely.
It must be the same for our friends over in the US and in Canada and the UK.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, there's nothing like Greece. We've talked about it many times on the show. It's the air, their environment, the culture, the people. There's something about it that draws us there.
Mm.
When we leave, it's like something part of us has left behind, and where, you know, there's something of us is missing.
Mm.
But look, I want to take it back to you guys. So, Con, we'll start with you. Tell us about your fighting history. And Tom read out an amazing credential of
which is the abridged version, I might add.
I started in 1979 in judo. But right next door to me, there was amateur wrestling. And at the time, a Greek had won the Olympic gold medal in wrestling in the Olympics in
1980 in Russia?
In Moscow, Miyakis. Yep. And I had an issue with people grabbing my clothes as they do in judo. So I started wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I took to it very quickly. Within a year or so, I won the state title. And obviously, wrestling is not a very big sport in Australia because we're a warm country. It's more of sport where they... in Europe and, you know, colder countries or the United States. I did win national titles, and I have represented Australia. However, I got flogged overseas in those days. Remember, we had the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
We had communist countries with serious wrestling programs. Mm. I was good enough for Australia, but I think my best was sixth in the world juniors.
Mm-hmm.
Funny enough, I wrestled a Greek and, you know, countries closer to the school level of Australia. In the 1980s, I moved to the UK to marry the British 1500-metre track champion.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and I started boxing to pass the time, and I took to it very quickly, and I turned professional. I wasn't a champion, but I had a good time, and I got to box. I've actually boxed in Greece.
Yeah,
I've boxed in France, in Holland.
How many fights have you had professionally boxed?
I've had 29 professional boxing fights, and I've fought in Australia as well. I wasn't a champion. I was good enough to be a professional, but wasn't good enough to... I have sparred world champions, Jeffeni, Costa Zu, Azuma Nelson, Charles Bowell. A lot of my problems have come from biting more than I can chew.
Okay. Yeah.
And then...
tell us, how did you represent Australia? What event was that? Was that the Olympics or...?
I represent Australia in the Commonwealth Games trials, in the Olympic trials, World Junior Championships, World Veterans Championships... Oceania, I actually won the Oceania or the South Pacific Championships as a junior in those days. And when I came back in the 80s back to Australia, I went back to school and did a sports science degree. And I was working as a personal trainer. P didn't agree with me. Kids are just, you all know, you're all fathers here. No one has respect for P teachers. And a person that became a very dear friend of mine, actually your uncle, put an ad in, I'm interested in bringing pancreation to Australia. Anybody interested? So I contacted him and we brought a guy out from Greece to teach us pancreation. But we wound up teaching him because he'd never heard of BJJ and things. And we became from there. We made organisation. I met Con at the first ever tournament in the Cyprus Club in 99 or 2000.
Wow.
So did you guys fight against each other in pancreation?
No, our students beat each other up.
Okay.
Even so, we're not in the same weight class.
Yes.
Okay.
And he's better looking than me.
I was going to say.
I do have my good looks.
Yes. And,
you just win your fights quicker, don't you?
I have exceptional head movement.
Yeah.
So, with pancreation, I had MMA fights. I had four professional MMA fights. In those days, it was bare knuckles. There was no time limits, but the money was better.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And with pancreation, we made friends. We made a world body. We're 86 countries. There's about 7 or 8 million of us around the world.
Wow.
Not as big as most martial arts.
Yeah.
And it is the father of modern MMA.
Yeah,
it is. Obviously, it's a lot safer.
Definitely.
We don't have face contact.
Yeah.
We don't have techniques against the spine or against the joints. Mm. It's just grown and grown. The world body is in Greece, and every 2 years we have world championships. Unfortunately, the last 2 years we've had problems with the COVID and that we haven't.
Yeah.
We've taken teams to Bulgaria, Iran, North Korea.
Wow.
United States, Greece, of course, Italy. That's where we went with Con last time.
Mm-hmm.
Con was the captain of the team.
Mm-hmm.
which came fifth out of 86 countries, Australia, which is a very big thing.
In 2016.
Con won a bronze medal in the self defence. He trained and competed with the team.
So did you.
Yeah, but I fought in the veterans.
That still counts, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Is it true that you had a fight 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
And you're still fighting? And you're in
In something safe. I fight in called continuous sparring in karate. There's no contact to the face with the fist. You can kick. Mm-hmm. It's 3-minute matches and you can go for broke to the body. Unfortunately, now they don't have veterans anymore and I'm thinking of just leaving it. The veterans is 35 and over in karate, ISKA, mm-hmm. As the con students.
Yeah.
But fighting young guys, even if I do win, it takes me 2-3 days to recover. And being honest, I'm just too old for it now. So
I mean, you're in your late 50s.
Yes.
And you had a fight 2 weeks ago. That's unbelievable.
I've had 9 fights this year.
Wow. Already?
Yeah, but
jeez.
They're elimination. Mm-hmm. So there's 5 guys, mm-hmm. so you might have to fight 3 times. They're only 3-minute matches, remember? They're not, you know, and the kick's above the waist, unlike con where the thigh kicks take it out of you.
Yeah.
Mm. Without banging karate, would you say that'd be one of the safer martial arts?
Hey, look, it's good, and it does have its merits too. You exercise speed and technique and strategy and stuff, so, you know, it's good.
But it's not as... Look, tough as kickboxing, yeah, thigh sure. kicks, knees.
It's different. It's different.
For an old guy like me, it's fun.
It's impressive. At your age, absolutely. 58, and is that a record, Tom?
Well, you know what they're saying, the kingdom of the blind, the one-eyed is king. I'm the last one left. Nobody competes at my age. They've all, you know, got better things to do, I suppose.
Oldest martial arts fighter in the world still fighting competitively.
According to the ISK, yes. They gave me a little plaque that says that.
How good's that?
But I'm sure there's some Russian guy who's 105 wrestling bears. It's just that, you know, no one's heard of him.
You're very humble, mate. That's very impressive.
It is.
No, I'm sure there's some Russian guy wrestling bears at 100. I'm sure of it. It's just that he doesn't put it on YouTube and probably no organisation.
It's a good point.
Very impressive. Fantastic.
What about you, Costa? Give us a little bit of a lowdown on your...
of course.
Your credentials.
I started training, funny enough, in 1979 as well. I was 6 years old at the time. So my dad had dabbled in Greco-Roman in Greece, just more of a playful and amateur way. So he kind of like got me involved into combative arts from young. I started training. He had a very good friend of his who was a Korean master.
Mm-hmm.
And I started training in Taekwondo and Hapkido back then when I was young. There was no age groups or anything like that. Everyone was just thrown in all together. So it was quite interesting.
Survival of the fittest, eh?
Well, yeah, it was just core. You know, it was just like bare minimum. And if you held your own, you held your own. If you didn't, you got out. It was that simple, you know. And it doesn't matter whether you were, you know, 6, you know, trying to do stuff or trying to resist against a fully grown man. But, you know, it taught us character and discipline and endurance and so forth. But, I started training then. In the 80s, I was very fortunate to have a wonderful teacher by the name of Mr. Nack, who had come over from Cambodia. And was also a Taekwondo black belt, but he was very well versed in Muay Thai. And at the time, he had organized a training trip over to Thailand.
Right.
And we flew to Koh Samui at the Lamaya Gym under the World Muay Thai Council. So I started training in Muay Thai in 1991. So I started training in Muay Thai then as well. And then I started competing heavily in kickboxing thereafter. I lived... over in Europe. I lived in Greece actually for quite a number of years, and I got to travel quite a bit to train and compete. Mm-hmm. Bulgaria, I was over in Holland for quite a bit, as well as in Greece and in Patra. Ironically, we actually had quite a few bouts in Patra.
Is this in kickboxing?
In kickboxing, yes. Yeah. In kickboxing at the time. This would have been, I'm talking now between maybe the years of 97, 98, 99.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay. Just before 2000. At the time, I also met Con as well, and we worked quite well together. And he had a lot to teach me as well in the wrestling department, as my primary sort of strengths were the striking area. So I kind of like won a few open full contact Australian full contact championships in the early 90s, 92, 93, 94. I was open Australian full contact.
Right.
Wow. Champion, which was bare knuckle, but there was no punching to the head. So it was bare knuckle, but it was just punching to the body,
mm-hmm.
Which was you know, quite tough in its best sense as well. Okay. After that, I also started training a lot. I wanted to get my grappling up, so I did a lot of work with Con. I did a lot of work with Mr. Larry Papadopoulos as well, who's another gentleman that we need to mention, who's part of the Greek community as well and has offered a lot, especially in the grappling department. Then started competing a little bit more in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Right.
Won a few competitions there, Sydney BJJ Cup. I got to trial for the World Professional Jiu-Jitsu Cup trials. That was quite good, quite competitive. Got a bronze medal there. That was quite...
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it was quite good.
So it's a world
games as well in 2009, which was quite good.
Yeah.
But my primary focus, to be honest with you, I also have a degree in philosophy as well.
All right.
And I studied quite a bit. From young, my dad used to actually taught me calligraphy. It's kind of like the sword and the brush kind of thing. So I like to correlate these things as well. And one thing I love about Bagration, especially about Bagration, is if we look at our ancestral background, and you know, the mind and body has been of equal balance, and I believe that Bagration is something that was, and if you look at like even the educational and schooling system back then, they had these things on par in balance, you know. Nous en sommes des yes, balance mind, balance body, you know, you find sometimes one thing that I would find, especially in the early 2000s and even up until today, is people will either focus too much on academics or too much on physical attributes and aspects. And one of my key goals as an instructor and as a teacher has always been to try to make people understand that the combative arts is not just about the physical presence and about the competitive nature, but also more about the embodiment of one. Because when we train martial arts, I mean, you look at someone like Con here, he's in his late 50s. I'm 48, so, you know, he's a little bit older than me. But it's something that we want to endure and continue and pursue and learn and progress, not only physically, but mentally for the rest of our days. Not something that, oh, yeah, I want to be a kick-ass fighter and I want to learn all these cool moves and then I get injured or I get hurt or it's just too much. And some people don't have the natural athletic ability, but improve themselves on a daily basis. So I think that's a beautiful thing with Bagration and generally martial arts in general.
And that speaks to the idea that the ancient Greeks had, that πρέπει να γυμνάσεις το σώμα σου as well as, you know, as well as your mind.
And these things correlate as well. And, you know, and the key thing with Bagration that I love the most is the πνεύμα, the spirit. You polish your spirit. Because when you're in that dogfight and you're trying to outthink your opponent, like in a game of chess, not only are you grueling in your physical exertion and attributes, but you need to outthink.
Sure.
You need to strategize. And this is something, if you look at our cultural background, it's always been about strategy because we've never had the numbers, right?
True.
So the beautiful aspect for Bagration to me, and as the father of all martial arts, it has been this quality. And this is something, and I've spoken about it, we've discussed this many times within our federation as well. One of the key aspects that I really enjoy and I would really love to put out there is making people understand that with Bagration, it's, yes, you try to be the best that you can be and you do have the competitive element from a local perspective, even up until a world championship level, at a high level. And we've had many people from Bankration that are now pro fighters and some of them compete in the UFC, right? Okay. But it is for everybody. It's not just for the elite, right? But we make ourselves elite by training and developing this mindset. And that's one of the key things that we hang on to as a race of people.
Mm.
What do we talk about? We talk about all the past famous greats, whether it's Leonidas or Alexandros or whoever you may talk about, or even Constantine the Great. I had to throw that in there because of our name, right? However, this internal flame, this warrior spirit, derives, in my opinion, or from Bagration, or its way of thinking, or producing the best from a mental and physical perspective. So this has been my sort of key objective with the organization. And this is something that I really would like to emphasize, that, you know, Avrio Methavrio, you want to bring your child, you know that, hey, it's going to be in a nice, good, safe, disciplined, strong environment that's going to give it these qualities. Now, whether your child chooses to compete or not is another question altogether, but it's going to get those attributes. Okay. It's going to progress to a level.
Mm. Very interesting.
Speaking of the philosophy point, I read recently guys like Plato and Socrates, they all studied pancreation.
It was a famous quote. It's Plato that says, a man that goes through life without physically enduring the aspects of wrestling, boxing, and pankration hasn't lived a life.
Unbelievable.
This was, I think it was Aristotle, actually, that said that. It was Aristotle on the teachings to Alexander. Because you've got to remember that Aristotle was actually Alexander the Great's teacher. Yeah. He was one of his teachers. So, and who was
a boxer. He wasn't a ideal guy.
And a lot of these guys that were of huge... And you'll notice that the most peaceful of people can actually be the most violent of people, but they have that under voluntary control. So it's an interesting aspect. And I mean, and that's been sort of my game. And even to this day when I teach, whatever we teach... We try to make sure that, you know, the fundamental key points is that people understand this, okay? Yeah. Because one of the down things that I find that when people always relate Bagratio and MMA is its brutality. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more depth.
It's probably a good time to maybe give a little bit of an explanation of what the sport is for those who maybe don't know. So, quick rundown. Bagration was actually introduced into the ancient Olympics in around 648 BC, as an empty hand submission sport that had very few rules other than prohibition of gouging and attacking of the groin. But even then, some parts of Greece, like Sparta, didn't even take those rules into consideration because they were mad. Then as now, though, Bagration utilizes a combination of boxing and wrestling techniques, as well as kicks, holds, joint locks, and chokes. It was a genuinely brutal sporting pursuit that formed part of ancient Greek military training and resulted in the deaths of many combatants during ancient times, but has also equally been depicted in some of ancient Greece's most striking pottery artwork, sculptures, historical accounts, including by the father of history, Herodotus, as well as Pausanias. Is that a fair enough account of Bagration, boys?
It is. The only thing that I will disagree, and I would like... Oh, I won't disagree. I'll add, and him and I have this discussion all the time, right? So you got the competitive guy. And I love competition, don't get me wrong. I competed, but I just feel that Bagration is so much deeper, right? Is... You will read that, and if you don't have any involvement of the combative arts, what would your first impression be? Don't answer me. It says it itself. But let's take a step back. Now we go to the ancient philosophers, which we just mentioned. I will mention the embodiment of all these other qualities. So we need to understand some paideia. This was actually mandatory training.
Yes.
For a lot of the young boys. And in some places... Even some of the girls took part, right? But in most cases, the boys, right? Back then. Now it's open for everybody. So that's just the sporting aspect there.
Yep.
Okay, so let's go to the battlefield now. What has preserved us as a race of people for eons? And I don't want to just say the Spartans because I think they're a little bit too much overrated. Let's say the Athenians, the Corinthians, and we have many other sort of...
Macedonians.
All of their warriors were trained in Bagration. In one form or another. Ano I kato Bagration, irrelevant, inclusive of weaponry. This is a life and death situation. This is not sport. This is a life and death situation.
When you say ano ke kato?
Okay, we'll get into that later. It's
that after
standing,
a fight? Ano kato?
Standing pancration.
Okay.
Kato Bagration.
Got it. Okay.
Grappling.
Which is wrestling and grappling.
Yeah. Okay, and then Con will explain that to you if you want.
Is that where the saying comes from? Thayini ano kato?
No.
That's good. Good connection. But
that is good, but that's probably...
Swing and a miss.
There is a talk.
Yeah,
it probably is.
That's how you know we're back to our best.
Oh,
Nick.
Exactly. We'll get those puns.
Okay, guys, who wants another Rizzo?
Oh, man.
Yeah,
sure.
Let's do it.
I'm in. But I will have to go against Con's wishes and have ice.
Okay. No, my grandmother's. Look, she was 103 and she did rollies.
She must have known something.
She must have known something.
While Nick does the refills, did we invent martial arts as well?
Every culture's got some sort of martial art. But I think it's the Greeks that put it together as a system first.
Right.
Because if you follow a great karate guy, Masayama, the first thing in his book, what does he say? To find the truth about karate, you must follow the travels of Alexander the Great through Asia. This is a great karate man saying that.
That's exactly right. And Con's spot on. So if you look at, historically speaking, the history of martial arts as we know it in text. So if you actually look it up, the explanation that you'll get is a guy by the name of Bodhidharma, or some people call him Dharma, who traveled from India to the southern Shaolin temples in China and taught them forms of wrestling and combat.
Right.
Then, of course, these people that were getting attacked by bands, they started mimicking animal movements. They had a lot of the kung fu systems, which are based on animal movements. Then it flourished throughout Southeast Asia and so forth. But then when the question was raised, well, hang on a sec, mate. If Bodhidharma came to China from India and taught them methods of wrestling, boxing, and martial arts, and meditation, where did he learn from? Well, where did the Indians come from? So the link was made from Alexander's. Where was Alexander's last conquest? India. Mm. He settled, his men exercised, he kept them physically active.
They married women, they conversed, and so forth.
He was big on that, Alexander the Great. He encouraged his soldiers to meet locals and used locals in his army.
Correct.
Yeah, the multicultural sort of dream that people of the world would be one.
100%. And this was the link. So the link was made that the connection was the Greeks. So the father and founding combative arts, technically, from a historical perspective, and this is not me or Con or anyone else saying it, this is what the history books and science tell us, that it actually did derive from Greece. But every culture has their own sort of specific way of doing things, and you know. Mm. But if you look at the text, that's what they actually tell us. Mm. So historically, you are correct. Yes, we did. But then again, you get a lot of people who's like, "Oh, you guys are Greek. You invented everything."
Yeah.
It's well, like, yes, right. Bro, we did.
Well, think of all the major sports in the world: wrestling, Greeks; boxing, Greeks; kickboxing, which is called picks. Lux, which means fists and feet, Greeks. Mm. MMA, Bagratio, Greeks.
So how close is... So UFC, MMA, is that the same thing?
No, UFC is a company.
Okay, and MMA
I worked for the UFC for 8 years. They're a company which, yes, made MMA what it is today. The modern name for Bagratio, professional level, is mixed martial arts. Mm-hmm. To use all your skills to be wrestle, box, kickbox.
Yeah, how different is it, pancration to mixed martial arts? Is it exactly the same thing?
Very similar, but we don't allow the ground and pound. We don't allow a lot of contact. You're a brave man. Someone's got you in a choke. You won't tap. The referee will step in and stop it.
Sure.
With MMA, these guys are professionals. People are there to see entertainment, to see someone get hurt. It is an amateur sport which is looking for Olympic representation eventually. Okay. But unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be in our lifetime.
I mean, when you watch something like the UFC now, which has become, I mean, it's a phenomenon in itself. It's in some instances, it's eclipsed the influence of boxing in the last 10, 15 years. When you watch something like that, do guys like you sneer at the level of talent, or are you impressed by it?
These are professional athletes. Their talent's very good. But our rules, again, pancration, modern MMA, are quite different. No face contact. We've got four-year-old kids here. We can't allow that sort of thing. What are we teaching our kids? Mm. These are professional athletes risking life and limb for money and for ego. Mm. Where athletes are doing it, they're amateurs. Yeah. They've got to go home. They've got to go to school tomorrow.
So that's a modern version. So they've modernized pancreation.
Yes, and made it safer.
Okay.
Which I think is a good thing.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. You need to remember something, and Con's got a valid point, right? You need to remember you're talking about a sport now. You're talking about the sport of Bagratio. MMA is a sport. It's not we're out on the street and the referee's going to come and separate you, or you're going to tap and the guy's going to let you go. Okay. So you've got to distinguish the difference. Yeah. And this is the beautiful thing with Bagratio, where you separate the sporting element, where you have it nice, safe. You can test yourself mentally and physically. You can put yourself in that dogfight, but you know you're going to be safe. And then you have the combative element, which we go back to our ancestral background. They were using shields, they were using swords, they were using halberds, they were using spears, they were using staffs.
Oplomachia was the word.
Very good. Oplomachia. Weapons training. Whereas today we will correlate that. So I do a lot of work with corrective services and law enforcement personnel. I don't. And we do oplomachia training all the time. So we'll use that sword, will be today's relevance, will be knife defense.
Sure.
Or a club. So your situational awareness and your combative strategies are completely different. So your training will change. Mm. And again, another beautiful aspect of Bagratio is that you have these two elements of self-defense.
Okay.
So internal and mental growth, and then the sporting safe,
competitive
side of things as well.
So you use pancration against someone with weapons. Is that what you're saying?
At a high level, yes, you do. Yes. It's part of black belt requirements. If you're a high level black belt, I mean, you know, you should be progressing your training, not only mentally, but you're also progressing technically. Mm. So if you're a good black belt, it doesn't mean that you're going to get in the cage or you're going to the ring and you're going to be this kick-ass fighter only. Mm. We get to a certain age, there's certain things we can't do. You're injured or whatever. But at the same time, we're married. If you're married or you have a partner, you have children, you want to make sure you're in a position to be able to protect and understand environmental awareness. Mm. Now, if I pick up this glass and I throw it at you, it doesn't matter how much MMA training you do. You know, you don't learn to defend it's against a glass attack, right?
It's going to hurt.
So you need to understand where Pagratio takes these elements into consideration, using terrain, environment, and environmental awareness. So your training will differ. From that perspective.
So that goes back to the battlefield.
Correct.
Of ancient Greece.
That's right. And that's where you've got to remember the sport came from the battlefield. Mm. That's where it all originally began.
To train soldiers in peacetime.
So let's go back to that. Let's go back to the ancient version of pancration now. So how is that differ to MMA today? So obviously they don't fight in a ring. They're outdoors, probably fighting on sand. They didn't have any rounds, I'm assuming.
No weight, no time limit. And victory only by submission or death.
Wow.
So history says that Ulysses returned 20 years later from Troy and his dog recognized him. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Homer, right. The Pancration champion returned a few weeks later and his mother didn't know who he was. And he was the champion. So imagine how injured and disfigured he was.
Yeah. Wow. So we laugh at this, but you need to remember, let's put ourselves in that period of time. These people was life and death. Mm. They were on the battlefield, and Con mentioned before, they were doing this in times of peace to keep themselves active, to keep themselves sharp. So they had to replicate what was actually taking place at that period of time. So a lot of people, they look at it and they think, oh, it's brutal, it's this and that. But hang on a sec, you got to remember, let's put ourselves in that time.
Mm.
How was life back then?
Yeah.
Life was like that, and you lived and you died and shit like that happened, right? Mm. So what he's referring to is, well, if we're going to replicate Pagratio to its fullest extent, that's what's going to happen.
It's a good point. I mean, I think there's a quote regarding Greece's ancient history that says something along the lines of, peace was a brief interlude to war.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
To have a sport like this, permeating everything, instructing and keeping society fit, active, and in the realm of battle must have been so important.
Yeah, it makes sense too, if I can add to that. So the ancient Athenians, they didn't have an army. Their army were the citizens. Citizens had
the hoplites.
Right. Not like Sparta. Spartans had their professional army. So they start at the age of 7, but Athenians and other city-states, their army were their citizens, so all the citizens had to do pancration.
It was mandatory.
Yeah.
Especially during through schooling periods, you know, up until a certain age.
Part of your social life was your time in the palestra, where we went as kids and played pinball machines. Part of your life was at the palestra, where you practiced martial arts. Mm. What's happened is, guess what? No Geneva Convention. Your sword's broken. The Persians coming at you, you took him down, double leg takedown, and you broke his neck.
Well, that's what guys alluded to. So you got to practice pancration with someone against weapons. So if your sword does snap or you lose your shield,
that's your
you either combat. Die or you use pancration to...
That was Pagratio at its fullest extent, with like its fullest extent, not from a sporting aspect, but from a lifestyle, right? But what did it teach us? Look at its citizens. Discipline, honour, respect, courtesy to your fellow human being, philosophy. You understand that not only your friend but your adversary, you need to be on guard. Yeah. So it taught us these qualities, you know, and this is where, as much as we love each other, and he focuses more on the competitive side, which I think is extremely important, especially to get that dogfight out of you and that toughness. Mm. I also believe that the essence of those qualities is in its art, the art of pancration itself, which is a beautiful thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's where people need to be proud of this, especially people from our culture, because I see so many people from our culture, you know, I want to take my kid to do karate. No, you want to take your kid to do Pagratio, you know what I mean? Or take it to an academy that does that has Bagratio in its program.
Yep.
Look, whether people like it or not, MMA right now, Bagratio, top of the food chain. Would you agree with me? It's top of the food chain. Everything else is up there. I would have Muay Thai because I think it's brilliant. But MMA right now is top of the food chain. War. Nukes, guns, slingshots, bows and arrows.
Yeah.
We are the nukes in right. the martial arts world, MMA. Mm. It is one of the gross, and it's real, even the sporting aspect in the cage. It's close as, it is brutal, yes, people are, it's as close to reality as you get.
I would put Bagratio over MMA, and I'll tell you why. You know why?
Oh, here we go.
Because...
By logical purity.
One. Yeah. One, yes, but...
Get the glove
everything that yeah. everything that I have been talking about, the problem that I have with MMA is trash talking.
Yes.
Disrespect.
Ideological purity. What
we're saying. I just don't like, yeah, it's Bagratio. Eroso. I'm gonna shake your hand. We're gonna beat each other up, bro. But you know what? We're gonna hug each other. We're gonna bow in our Hellenic ancient ancestral ceremonial salute. All right, which we'll give a definition of what that is in a moment, which is very, very significant.
You just do it
constantly. Yeah, yeah, eroso.
It means all power
mm-hmm. wow.
comes from the mind.
I hold all power. All power comes from the mind. I'm going to fight you with my body yeah. and fantastic. Mind. Right? So, and it's salute. And when we shake hands, we always shake hands like this.
Oh,
before we engage and after we engage in combat, right? Right? Because the hand is closer to the heart. It's not personal.
Yeah, right.
We are brothers.
But it will right. break your limbs.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But again, he's
and
not...
change your life forever.
Is that closer because you can headbutt him or no?
It's quite funny. But the problem, but the thing is even if that occurs,
I love all this.
You know it's not personal.
Yeah.
There's an we're just trying to test our skills here. See, in mind and body.
It's this ancient...
This is ancient. This was standard
so
practice. You had to do this.
Wow.
If you didn't, this was a sign of disrespect, not only to your opponent, yeah. but to your teacher and your palestra and your... And your academy colleagues. As well.
It's very yeah. philosophical in the sense that it's very similar to be able to engage, not an adversary, some you know, another philosopher and entertain a thought without accepting it. In the same way, we're testing each other. We know that this is a real battle. And we're just testing each other to reach our limits.
Yeah.
It's very similar.
What is higher than the ultimate test of two human beings with their natural movements, hands and arms, and their minds? Trying to out-strategize each other. Yeah. Name me one thing that's more. Mm. Nothing. That's why it is the ultimate test. It's yeah. a test.
Wow.
Because not only does he have to break my spirit and my will, he's got to outthink me and out-strategize and use yeah. his strengths against my weaknesses and vice versa.
Wow.
Okay? So this is the beauty. And that's the only reason why I picked Bagratio. Because of that reason. Because in Bagratio, you won't get that trash talk.
Yeah,
because it's a sense of honor, it's a sense of respect.
Not and to mention, we'll throw you out.
Yeah, well, there you go. That happens too, you know. And people that don't adhere to these sort of this discipline, this code, this ethics, this respect, they don't last long. Mm.
Do you get and people like that coming and look, saying, "I just usually, want to belt the shit out of people"?
At our rarely, academies,
very rarely.
It doesn't. It doesn't happen. They don't last long.
Mm. They live by themselves.
Yeah, they're there for the wrong reason.
Yeah, because it's all bark and no bite kind of thing. Sure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you don't
actually,
really get
up. Good point you make, because when I was younger, I did karate as well. And we had to walk in and we had to bow to the training hall.
To the dojo.
To the dojo. And you had to bow to the trainer and whatever you call them. So it was
and
all
to
respect.
Yeah.
And to each other.
So it's a form of respect.
Yep.
It is.
So
yeah,
when you
point.
Instill this and you start doing this subconsciously, not because you have to think about doing the right thing, but you're doing it subconsciously, that's the ingrainment. So when you turn around and say Eroson, and I treat him as my brother in arms in Bagratio, not only we're testing ourselves, but in life we're going to fight for each other.
It's beautiful.
We're going to be there for each other.
Yeah.
What is more beautiful than that? What is more Hellenic than that?
Camaraderie, teamwork.
Correct.
Yeah, it's everything.
Yes.
And it goes back to our ancient ancestors.
So
we're always outnumbered.
When you
like
say
you
to
said.
Me what I'd pick rather MMA. And that's the reason. That's the reason.
I put it together because there was a way to sort of show that.
The integration. I get it, bro.
It's great to see both sides of that argument, though.
Look, I'm involved in both. Like I said, I worked for the UFC for 8 years. Mm. Money obviously changes things. It's. I say this, and it's become a bit like WWE.
Yeah.
Bad talking, fighting, I mean, McGregor throwing chairs at buses.
But that's what sells, right? That's what sells.
Yeah.
Well, are there a company that they're there to make money?
Their dignity.
It's a business.
Yeah, but it's their own choice too, Con.
That is
they
true.
Don't have to. You know what I mean? Because there's people in the sport that are very dignified, very respectful, well, and they're great champions and they're great athletes.
Well, where do you think Whittaker came from? He came from Bagratio and Hapkido.
Yes, he did. Okay. He did.
But he seems respectful in the room.
He is wonderful.
Yeah. Like Khabib. Khabib seemed quite respectful. Yeah,
he
is. As well.
Khabib's from Bagratio.
Is he?
Is he really?
Yes.
There you go.
I met Khabib when he was a junior. I didn't know who he was. He was.
Was Conor McGregor?
That's right. He was doing Bagratio and Sambo. Yeah.
And Sambo, yeah. That's correct.
What is Sambo? You mentioned that before.
Sambo is a martial art. It's like judo with submissions, mm-hmm. but you wear shorts, not long pants. Mm-hmm. And there's also like MMA, but they wear head guards. So they fight like MMA, mm-hmm. and the aim is to knock out or submit. So there's two types. The sport one, similar to judo, and the combat one. It's a Russian sport made about 100 years old. Or so, you know, when the Soviet Union was around.
Right.
However, the Soviet Union being what it is, the guy that invented it, they put him in Siberia to break rocks and he died.
Oh, really?
Because they decided we don't like you or you're not communist enough or maybe you're a traitor to the Japanese.
Yeah.
Sambo is very, very similar to Bagratio. The only thing is they catch jackets. Well, Bagratio was a nudist sport. You have to show that. Yeah, wow. And it always started with the hands open.
And there's no advantage on grips.
Yes.
Okay, so they fought in the nude. So we go back to ancient Pancratia now. Well, so they fought in the nude. I think you touched on it before. There was no rounds, which means what? There's no drink
no
breaks.
No weight classes.
No weight classes.
That is correct.
And unlimited. No time. No timeouts. And they fought outdoors on sand.
That could is correct.
What do you think 2,500 years ago, who considered weight class? If you're carrying your battle armor, that could weigh 50 kilos. But I might be 10 kilos heavier than you, or 15 kilos heavier than you, but my battle armor weighs 10 kilos. Weight classes were completely irrelevant. So the correlation of no weight classes was due because of that reason, because of the correlation. So if your shield is bronze and mine's wood, which one's heavier? So your weight compared to mine. Do you see what I'm trying to say
here?
Yeah,
Okay.
Right, so that's why there was no weight classes. There was no time limit. So when you're out on the battlefield, how do you know how long you're going to take to win this battle or lose this battle or die or kill? Do you know? You don't know.
But so there's no amount of physical fitness.
That's right.
As well.
So if I know that he's stronger than me or heavier than me, I can't beat him pound for pound. Mm. He's going to beat me. So what do I need to do? I need to gas him. There's no time limit. So I've got to think, how am I going to defeat this opponent? He's too big. He's too strong. But I can tire him. He's going to tire before me. What do I have? I have speed, but he's got power. So how am I going to outthink him?
Wow.
So the whole concept of no rules and no time limit was to utilize your mind to maximum strategy. And the correlation came all from the battlefield because there's no time limit. You're out on the battlefield. You don't know what weight you're carrying as a soldier. I don't know my helmet or my body armor or whatever the case may be.
Think of those battles. The armies weren't next to each other. You're in Bryan, I'm in Rockdale. Yeah. So we're running at each other. We're 20, 30 kilos. Remember, steel was crude in those days. It wasn't, you know, no lathes. We run a kilometer towards each other. And then we have to fight a battle for hours after we've run with all that gear. People just don't realize how fit these people were.
Yeah.
Mm. You know,
the Battle of Plataea, which was fought a few weeks after the Battle of Thermopylae. They're all looking at each other. So the Spartan, the only Spartan that survived the Battle of Thermopylae, broke ranks and ran towards the Persians because they're all, there's too many of them, I don't know, are we going to do this? He instigated, knowing that well that he was going to die. This, you've run with all this gear, a kilometre, and you fight a battle at the end of it. People just don't realise how
strain it would have on you.
And people die those days. You got stung by a bee, you die, let alone you got cut. There was no death toll. There was no... People died. One in five women died of childbirth. You've got to think how life was so flimsy. So these people...
Super.
Yeah. So the government, and especially the Athenians, which was the first ever democracy, you to be a citizen to have a vote, you had to have been in the palestra and you had to be a hoplite. Hoplite means you own your own weapons. Yeah, remember...
Or a rower, I think it was as well. A rower in the
You had to be in the palestra. Palestra covered all disciplines, running, wrestling, Bagratio. Otherwise, you couldn't be a citizen to have a vote, to have a say how things are run. Mm. So it was a rite of passage, Bagratio, in a way, and being a soldier. Wow. Which now, you know, our society's changed. If something's wrong with you, we'll give you a house and give you all these rights, and your contribution is zero. Mm. So everyone seems to have rights, but no obligations. So see how it's sort of changed.
Yeah.
And that's what Quan's trying to put here. We're not just selling you arm locks and punches and kicks. You can learn that anywhere. We're giving you a lifestyle and a way of life. Yeah, I don't know who it was. You've mentioned it before. A man who can't fight and says he's a peaceful man. He's not a peaceful man.
Mm.
He's harmless.
Yeah.
A man who can fight but doesn't fight
is an extremely, extremely dangerous man that has that under voluntary
control. So don't tell me you're a man of peace. You can't fight.
Yeah.
You're harmless.
Yeah. Great point.
So you're saying the ancient Athenians and Spartans, you weren't, especially the soldiers, you weren't allowed to carry a sword or a shield unless you did pancration. You had to
unless
earn the
right. Unless you trained, yes, a rite of passage.
But that's been a rule of thumb for every culture. Mm. Like even if you look at Japan and the samurai class, you are only of the warrior samurai class to wear the swords. Otherwise, you weren't allowed to have weapons.
Mm.
And this dates back. This was taken, the samurai code of using that was taken from the Hellenic ideal.
You had to do your time in the palestra, not necessary pancration, boxing, wrestling, running,
in order
shop,
to be considered
discus,
a citizen.
Yes.
Okay.
You had to do your time in the palestra.
Yeah.
Part of the thing was that you did your time, because palestra, we think pali wrestling, it's actually a wide thing. It just means gymnasium, where young men socialized.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't done your time, you just couldn't be. You didn't get to vote. Remember, the democracy was flimsy in those days.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so let's talk about Olympionikes from ancient times. The names of some of the people that were winners of the Olympics in Bagration still reverberate today, don't they?
Yes.
There are,
I certainly do.
There are still statues.
Polyrama.
Tell us a little bit about some of the people that may have won.
There was a guy called Polydama, and obviously with all athletes, there was ego. So the king of Persia invited him to his palace
just
to ridicule him.
Sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to say, so the gentleman that Khan is referring to is actually a very, very important figure, even in our federation today.
Right.
And we hold a specific event in his name.
Right.
And it's called the Polydama, but this is based on more the art of pancration. So it's based on self-defense. So Polydama was famed for fighting against weaponed, unarmed, and having faced weaponed opponents.
Right.
So he was actually quite a good Bagratiasti in the essence of Bagratio. So we hold an honor. So please continue. Tell him what he did. It was a major feat of what he did. He was one of the very few that stood his ground against King Xerxes himself.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So he's actually quite impressive.
Wow. Okay.
So this is a prisoner of war, and Xerxes wants to ridicule him. Says, "I have the immortals." He goes, "If you can beat my immortals, I will let you go."
And you got to remember that the immortals were the elite. Like the special forces of King Xerxes.
Yeah. So they've put him naked in the middle of a stadium, all waiting to see the Greek. One came out with a javelin, threw the javelin, missed him. He took him down and broke his neck. The king's not going to stand for this, so he sends a man with an axe. He takes him down, breaks his arm. The third one comes out, again armed, takes him down, and the king's disgusted by now. Says, "Kill him, they don't deserve to be here." So to wind up, the king goes, "No, I'm going to show him mercy. You can live." Well, the king now has been insulted. His best soldiers have been one killed, one maimed, and the other one's been spared. And he's looked like a fool in front of tens of thousands of his citizens.
This is the god king.
Yeah, this is the god king. So he thought, "How am I going to get out of this and keep my dignity?" So he gave him his weight in gold and let him go.
Wow. Imagine being in front of King Xerxes himself and his imperial army and defeating three of his best armed warriors, and you're unarmed, right? The composure, the mind frame. Polydama is a great example, irrespective of what he did later on in his life and circumstances, as a Bagratiasti, adapting to his environment, the situational awareness, and working with weapons, whether it's competitive or not, he adapted. And, you know, he's a really good example that Khan gave. Wow. And it's a wonderful story. Absolutely. Too. It's a great story. And not a lot of people know this. No. They don't know.
I didn't know that story.
No. And if you see today, even in our federation, even at the World Championships, they'll have the Bolivam event. And it's in honor of this man. And it's all self-defense. You have to face a knife, which is the replicant of the sword back then. The javelin, which you mentioned, which is more of a long stick, like a bow staff.
Mm-hmm. And a chain,
which would represent the chain and sickle.
Right.
Mm. And you need to perform self-defense situations against these three weapons. And of course, we have the modern versions, right?
Yep.
Mm. Of them. And it's a wonderful sort of like example of this beautiful story and how we tried to maintain. And this is why this is important, because when people dabble into the art, they learn these wonderful, not only stories, but the lessons they can provide us as well. And these wonderful athletes and practitioners of this wonderful art.
Fascinating. Do you have any more of these?
Yeah, well, Con is a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just got my purple.
Yep.
And people say, armbars, Brazilian, this, that. And I say, forgive me, your country didn't exist. They dug up places in Macedonia, and the death camps of King Philip. There's a guy who's got another guy in a triangle choke, and he hasn't got a Portuguese name, because the triangle choke existed thousands of years, on armbar.
Yeah.
Well, this has always existed. However, the modern and the Grace has done a great job. They've marketed in a way, it's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but it's not. It's been around for thousands of years. It's actually Bagratio.
Anyway, each to their own, and they've done their own sort of good thing as well.
Yes, and, I'm not taking away from
that. I kind of like the fact that they've done well, because it's lifted us up with, you know what I mean? Yeah. People look at us now a lot more because of that. So, you know, if it wasn't for them and if it wasn't for the UFC, we probably wouldn't get the amount of coverage that we do. So, you know, we've got to take the positives out of it. However, that's a really interesting point that Con made. I was having a discussion, and actually we were training, so I was having a bit of a role. I was having a bit of a sparring session with a really, really good friend of mine, a high-ranking Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we were talking afterwards and stuff, and he tends to use, because he's Brazilian, he tends to use a lot of Portuguese terminology. We know what the rear naked choke is, right? So the Brazilian terminology for rear naked choke is called mata leon. Mata leon.
Hmm.
When you translate this to English, it means to kill a lion. So I took him over to my statue of Hercules.
Okay, I think I know where this is going.
Yeah. Right? And I said, do you know why you guys call this technique mata leon?
Yeah.
He goes, why? I said, do you see this gentleman here on this fine statue holding the lion's head? He goes, yeah, bro, this is Hercules.
Yeah.
I said, that's right. Do you know what he did to kill the lion? He goes, don't tell me. He got him in a rear naked choke. Okay, that's exactly right. And that's why you guys call it Mata Leon.
Oh, wow.
It's the irony, right?
Yeah.
So it's great.
Well, they say that Hercules created pancration, either him or Theseus.
Theseus.
Actually, Theseus made the boxing rules according to what I've read. It depends who you read.
Mm-hmm.
Herodotus or Plutarch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Hercules was the guy that made Bagratio according to people. And Theseus was the...
Slay the Minotaur.
Yeah, and he actually invented the boxing glove, which was the Caistos, which was leather bands over the knuckles.
Correct, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I'd like to give them both credit, because I don't believe that one art will endure just from one founder. It slowly gets developed, and you know, we've all added our little sauce and touches to it, right? I would like to credit them both, and I think they both deserve credit, you know? And even Achilles himself deserves credit to a certain degree as well, you know, for his implementation. And you know, because you've got to remember back then, what was the weaponry that they were using? You know, Hercules was using the club and, you know, different sort of strangleholds. And then as it kind of elaborated, you had certain parts of Greece that would specialize in more the wrestling and grappling aspects.
Yeah.
And you had us, we were on the other side, that would specialize on the anopagratio, which was the standing aspect.
Again, that had a lot to do with geography,
elbows and stuff like that. So you had various areas that would specialize in different things. And of course, the branches of pygmy lactisma, which is the punching and kicking, and you know, the bali would evolve a little bit further. So you had different areas, and so that was the beautiful thing too, that you had different areas that would specialize in different things. And it was great because if I really wanted to really work on my area and wanted his expertise, I would come to him and then he would work and we would work together and we would learn from each other and we would work, you know what I mean? There was not one specific thing.
And so, let's not forget they stopped wars and all conflict every 4 years.
Yeah.
For 1 month to have the Olympic Games and then they go back to slaughtering each other. Thus the Peloponnesian Wars lasted 150 years.
Yeah.
Because if it was a good day and it was hot and they had a bit too much ouzo, they didn't go to war. And of course, they had the Corinthian Games, the Pythian Games, and the Olympic Games.
So the Olympics were just one of them. A lot of people forget that.
The Greeks wanted a holiday. They only worked between holidays.
Yes, but the discipline to adhere and obey those rules.
Yeah.
Yes.
Strict code of honour. You know, it was amazing to me.
No, it is, absolutely.
Touching on those ancient Olympics, can you tell us any famous Pancratian athletes that you might know of? I've read a few, actually. Have you heard of Adichion?
Something we learn in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu now is you don't cross your legs when you've got a rear naked choke, right?
Yeah.
Because someone will twist your ankle. Well, this guy was being choked in the final of the Pagratio. He's about to die, but the guy crossed his legs across his stomach, so he's put his foot over and put an ankle lock on it. So the guy who's got the choke, who's winning the match, screamed out, "Stop!" But the guy that got the hold died. Yeah, so he was the Olympic champion after death.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's,
that's a beautiful story,
too. It is. It was the 54th Olympiad, 564 BC.
Wow.
Actually, my students, when they go for their black belt, they have to write a thesis on this.
Wow.
They let him cross their legs.
So this poor bloke that died, he was undefeated apparently. He won three Olympics, the 52nd, 53rd, and he died in the 54th.
He was a triple Olympic champion. What happened was, because the guy had the rear naked choke, they didn't know whether he had tapped, verbally submitted, or whether this guy had perished before he verbally submitted. But in honour, because he had died, they gave him the belt.
Wow.
Yes, that legend says the guy in the rear choking hold
screamed out in pain.
Because
his ankle.
And he verbally submitted. Therefore, he was out.
It's called apagorefsi in Greek.
Right.
I forbid you to hurt me anymore.
Right. Yeah, and essentially he either broke his toe or his ankle. Broke his ankle.
Because he's got his ankles crossed. Now, what you do is you cross your leg over and you triangle your legs and you thrust your hips up and it snaps both ankles. So there's this rule of thumb that we have in Pagratio.
You never do that.
You never cross your ankles.
Right.
You quickly open your feet and place them on the inside of the thighs. This is more of a technicality, but that's what occurred.
Well, how's that for a lessons learned, Tom? Yeah. Adichion in 564 BC taught us something. Unbelievable.
Speaking of ancient Greek athletes, Milo. Who has Milo? You know, that's named after Milo of Croton, the greatest wrestler that ever lived.
Mm-hmm.
Croton was a city in Sicily where the Messenians to escape the Spartans went and built. And this guy, he invented modern weight training. He lived on a farm, so every day woke up and picked up a calf and walked around. As the calf became a bull, unknown to him, he became stronger. Yeah? Progressive resistance training. So he was Olympic champion, never to happen ever again, 6 times. But again, ego. Legend has it that he tried to steal some honey from a tree and his fingers got caught and the wolves ate him. Right? But the true story is he got drunk with his mates in a cave. And they all ran out because there's an earthquake. He tried to hold the cave up and he fell on him and killed him.
Oh, look,
you
can
go whichever story you like here.
Wow.
Earthquakes happen.
Yeah.
What
so he's Milo of Croton.
Wow.
Yeah.
The inventor of modern weight training.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to think that all that strength and conditioning training came from the gentleman that Con just said.
Yeah, wow.
And the guy goes, "Oh, Milo, it's a chocolate drink." I said, "Really? Google it." And people are shocked. He said, "Google it."
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
I've got to say, we've touched on the Olympics here. I was actually at Olympia a couple of years ago. It was the first time I'd ever been, you know, after being to Greece so many times, you know, like something like 10 times.
Feels haunted, doesn't it? It feels haunted when you're there.
Absolutely.
You don't feel alone when you're there. You just feel,
Absolutely.
You feel like there's someone else there. Yeah. Something is there. Yeah.
I mean, I said this to my wife. I said to her, "This feels really strange. I feel as though I've been here before." I'd like to hear your experience of it, being in the gymnasium there, or being in those areas.
Yeah. In the track. And the...
being there where these encampments would have been during the Olympics. What did you guys feel when you first went there? And what were the things that you took away from that trip?
I actually got quite emotional. Like, I was actually standing in the middle, and like my eyes were watering. My daughter's like, "Dad, are you all right?" It's like, "What's wrong?" It's like, "Nothing. I'm just having a moment." And to be honest with you, I just had my moment. I just had this visualization. I just closed my eyes and I just and pictured this wonderful arena, and I'm thinking, like, I just felt it, you know what I mean? It was just really emotional for me, and it touched my soul. It really did. And I love that experience. And you know how we say, collect moments, not things? Mm. To me, that was one of those moments.
Wow, beautiful. And what about yourself, Con?
I thought it was a haunting experience. I remember I took a team to fight in Sparta in 2012. One of them came with us to Italy. They then won a World Veterans Championships. And we all just stood there. And I just got this shiver up my back, and I really got emotional. I just felt like everyone's here. It's so hard to explain in words, isn't it?
It's so hard to explain in words.
I mean, I had the same feeling when I went to Thermopylae.
Yeah.
You know?
I had the same experience too at the Temple of Delphi.
Yeah, unbelievable, some of these sites. To think the rich history that we have that has influenced so much in this world, and to be able to stand in those places. Mm. How important do you think it is to be able to teach our children about that? I mean, growing up, all our parents, I'm assuming, would sort of ram that sort of stuff down your throat in most instances. And in many instances...
Hey, we went to grade school, remember, whether we liked it or not.
Number one, do you teach your kids about that sort of stuff now? And were you receptive to it as children?
I grew up not knowing who the seven dwarfs and the bears were, right? Yeah. And my father thought these things were a waste of time. So by the time I was seven, I could give you details of battles, casualties.
Wow.
12 labors of Hercules, because my dad thought it was important, because my dad thought that was a conspiracy to keep children stupid with, you know, thunderbirds and things like that. So you could rule them. So he thought it was very important.
Wow.
And also he didn't want us to lose our culture. Wow. So I'd say these stories to kids at school, and they'd ring my mum, say, "Your son's scaring the kids." He said, "Some bloke killed a snake with nine heads. We can't have things like this in kindergarten." These kids are going home and wetting the bed. I grew up that way, so it's normal to me. My kids know this stuff.
Yeah.
My son just came back from Greece studying the Kapodistrian University.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So my kids grew up with this stuff.
Mm. Fantastic.
So with me, my dad was really big on me doing ancient Greek and calligraphy. A lot of the times that we do calligraphy, we would do ancient Hellenic quotes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was an hour lesson on what this quote meant, who it was from, what year it was from. So I grew up, that's why I kind of have a philosophy degree as well. I'm big on philosophy.
Right.
I think it's invaluable. I think that all of this stuff, our history, and all of this material that is presented, I'm a big advocate for it. I think through Pagratio, you discover things, and a lot of the times on your own, because of the research you do, because of the questions it raises, and that's the key. Mm. It's not so much that it's going to give you answers, but it's going to create questions, and those questions are going to create a free channel of thinking. And just like martial arts, there's not one possibility. There's many ways to do things, and you got to find the right one.
And
it just creates a free chain of thinking, which correlates and relates over to our everyday living. So then when you're problem solving, or when you're at work or school or college or university, or you're doing something or whatever the case may be, you're thinking this strategic way. And that was a key concept in our ancient Hellenic society. And that's what this taught us. Yeah, so I was kind of like brought up like that. And sure. I try to do this till this day, with all my students at my academy and with my own kids as well.
Yeah.
I'm the same.
We do this and we don't think about doing it. And I'm sure you guys are similar too, right? To us, it's normal. But the whole point is to ingrain it from a young age where it's not a conscious thing, it's a subconscious thing.
Yes.
We do it because it's normal to us, not because we have to think about doing it.
It's foundational.
That's right. And that's why I think too, as well, is with Pagratio, it gives you those tools.
Yeah.
bang, I've got to think outside the box. How am I going to manage this physical situation? How am I going to solve this problem?
I mean, we've seen the success of movies, for example, and Costa, you might be able to weigh in on this one.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the success of movies like those of Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, mm-hmm. The Karate Kid, Ip Man, all these types of things.
Mm-hmm.
The Asian forms of martial arts seem to dominate popular culture. And Bagration, to a large degree, is not on the same sort of level of public knowledge. Why mm-hmm. do you think that is, and why do you think it is that the Asian forms are so popular?
I'll tell you exactly why it is. The reason why is because, unfortunately, as we've progressed through the ages, our cultural background thinks of any combat as violent and brutal.
Right.
That's why. Whereas in Asian culture, it's part of, like it was in the ancient Hellenic culture, it was part of everyday life.
The fabric of society.
It was part of the schooling system. Now, you speak to your grandparents and your parents, and you tell them that you're going to do this, or you show them a form of Bagration or wrestling or UFC, what are they going to say to you? Look at this. Oh my God, no, we won't have any of that.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. You show that to Asian culture,
they're
going to look at it, this is normal. Yeah. This is everyday society. And this is the key concept that they were trying to get across. It's like, hey guys, it was like this in ancient Greece day in, day out. Mm. It's a normal, acceptable. So what's changed? We have a Greek festival and you put on 250,000 dancing groups, but we're asked to put on one martial arts performance and no, that's brutal.
Mm.
Come on, man. You fucking kidding me?
Is this a religious thing?
I don't want to blame anyone specifically, but I will say that it's not one thing. It's an accumulation of all these factors that have contributed to us not accepting it because this is violence.
Yep.
We're not going to have that yet. This is what's made our race of people endure through the time. And we are here today because of Bagration. That's the honest truth, with no bullshit involved, right? Mm. But the Asians accept this. They honor it.
Very interesting.
And they keep it. And they encourage their family members to partake. You go to Korea, it's mandatory you do Taekwondo at school, whether you like it or not. Mm. I hate it. I don't care, you're going to do it.
Judo in Japan. Everyone's a black belt all the time.
You see what I mean? In China.
Mm.
You do some form of washu or kung fu. Whether you're good or not, is irrelevant. They maintain it. Wow. Do we do it? No, this is violence. We're not going to have that.
Mm. Is a lot of it our fault then?
Yeah, of course it is. 100% it's our fault.
Should we be?
Why are we the way we are today? Why, as not only on a political scale, as an overall picture, why are we stepped on? Because we don't have this attitude. That's the bottom line. Like, if we want to cut the bullshit and you want to be honest, that's what it is. All right? And you want to stand up to the air, you've got to train.
Yep.
You got to train this, your heart, your mind, and your body. And then no one steps on you. And if they do, you stand united and you face it, whatever the consequence. And that's why they are that way. That's why in cinema, they get the exposure and we don't.
Very interesting.
Name me one Hellenic film that's got anything involved with combat. One. One.
Just come
Come closer to the microphone.
That's only what that comes to mind.
Oracles. That's right. But on a serious note, you look at the Asians, they hang for this up. You look at some of these beautiful movies, even like Red Cliff, like the Battle of Red Cliff, which has got naval battles, which has got all involved martial arts. Everything is based around their martial arts. Because it's accepted.
When do you think it changed for us Greeks?
Turkish occupation, Ottoman occupation, 400 years.
So since then?
The Romans before that, the Vandals, everybody that's come in.
Now that you just said that, Con just reminded me of something. We glorify people like Karaiskakis, Athanasios Diakos, που τον σουβλίσανε τον άνθρωπο.
I had a feeling this was going to come.
All right, Kolokotronis, modern warriors.
Mm.
Modern warriors.
Yeah.
No, we're not going to have this combative violence.
Mm.
See the irony? These people fought so we can be here today.
That's right.
And the irony is we don't want nothing to do with this.
Mm.
And that's the problem we face with Bagration. This is the biggest problem.
Right.
Please continue. I just wanted to clarify because you made an excellent point.
Yeah, look, what kept the Greeks Greeks was the pride in their culture, even though it has somewhat deteriorated. But what kept the Greeks was also during the Ottoman Empire, being there, you know, all over the Balkans, was the religion, the Kriforskoliyo Christianity. However, what kept Bagratio out of the modern Olympics is also Christianity.
Right.
When Pierre Coubertin, this is fact, yep, approached...
The one who brought
back the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. 1896.
Yep. Right. And the Catholics said, no, no, no. Any sport except Bagratio.
So they singled it out.
Yes. And he said, why not? He goes, we cannot have pagan religions mm-hmm. compete with Christianity. Because the man that won Bagratio was considered a god. He never paid taxes and knocked down the walls. Wow. He was a ward of the state if he won Bagratio.
But it was also a sacrifice to Zeus.
So they couldn't have that. That's what kept Bagratio
wow.
out of the Olympics.
There have been pushes to include Bagratio in the modern Olympics. Why hasn't it happened?
Marketing, financing, a lot of things. I'll say this, and I'll probably offend people that do Taekwondo. Taekwondo to get in the Olympics, and this is fact, this is not what Kwan says, went to third world countries that had no Taekwondo, Nigeria, blah, 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 and they all got one vote each. But they had no Taekwondo schools, and he got in.
We've actually got breakdancing at the 2024 Olympics in Paris.
Is that a sport now?
Apparently. Well, BMX is a sport now.
Yeah.
Surfing. I mean, synchronized surfing. Swimming is still an Olympic sport.
I can't
sport,
believe golf is a sport.
The Olympics.
Yeah. I mean, how does it
an Olympic sport, right? No, this don't discredit the golf, but yes. Like as an Olympic sport, yeah. You know?
I mean, how does it make you gentlemen feel when you see other sports that, you know, like the one that Nick just mentioned, and not have Bagration in there?
Look, that's a really good question. I am pleased from a sporting perspective that boxing and wrestling is still there.
Yes.
Because it does have its connection to pancreation.
And it was almost removed and recently.
Well, the wrestling is not going to be there for long.
Yeah, I understand
they
that.
They don't want Greco-Roman.
Yeah, really. Well, they're obviously having problems getting people trying to compete in it because they're, a lot more people are veering towards freestyle. However, right. In saying that, the thing is, it's very difficult to get Bagratio. And I'll tell you why. Let's have a look at our combative systems thus far, right? So we have boxing, we have wrestling, we have judo, we have taekwondo, and now we have karate, right? Well, we had it as a demonstration sport. It still needs another couple of Olympics before it gets fully accepted. At the next one, they're going to have jiu-jitsu as well, but then again, Muay Thai is trying to do the same. But I really seriously doubt that all of these things will become Olympic sports. Maybe they might, and I'll tell you why. See, you have one art that is pure punching. You have one art that's pure grappling. So you have boxing and wrestling. Then you have one art that's pure kicking, which is taekwondo. Then you have one art that is pure throwing, which is judo. The all-encompassing one is Bagratio, and they're not having it in there. I think one of the key mistakes was, Con mentioned previously, we had some issues in 2004 as a demonstration sport. It didn't get marketed properly. It didn't get the right publicity. It didn't really get portrayed the way it should have. There's a lot of things that are questionable right there. It wasn't utilized to its maximum effect, and that was the perfect timing. And the reason why it was perfect timing, and I do believe if they did it correctly, Bagratio would have been in there, was that was the year Greece won the Euro.
Yeah,
we won the basketball. We had the Olympic Games. We had everything going. That was the year, and we didn't do it. So I seriously doubt we're going to do it now, right?
Yeah.
They're not that keen. Let's be realistic at this. If you look at the amount of people that actually look at the combative arts in the Olympic Games, it's a small quantity. It's only a small percentile as opposed to football or basketball or something else, right? So it's going to be extremely difficult.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
But you need to keep dreaming, right? Mm-hmm. From a sporting aspect.
Are people working on it right now?
I think they're trying. They're doing their best. There's quite a few member countries. The last World Championships we went to were done quite really well, actually. Yeah. I was really happy with the ones that we went to in Italy.
Yep.
They really went out of their way. They tried their best. We had great hosts. It was a great competition, great arena, good teams. There was almost 50 member countries there. It was run over 3 to 4 days. There was how many competitors? Like over 2,000 competitors.
Seven mats running.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Yeah. They had great demonstrations. They had everything. So they're doing all the right things. Yeah. However, you need to remember that karate is doing that, and Muay Thai is doing that.
Yeah,
and Jiu-Jitsu is doing that, and Taekwondo is doing that. So you're competing against 1,000 other people that probably have more practitioners than us.
Mm, so
we need to make sure that we emphasize the art and try to get as many people involved in Pagaratio as possible. So once we have numbers, then we can, you know, look at Pagaratio as a whole, because you've got support even if you don't have that many competitors.
Yeah. We just want to take a slight turn to the right for the moment. We want to talk about something really quickly that is kind of topical at the moment, that's right up both your gentlemen's alleys. George Kambosos Jr. Do you guys know him? Have you seen him fight in person?
Actually, I spoke to him 2 days ago at Riverwood at the Shops. My dad, Con's dad, no, and Kambosos' grandfather used to drink coffee together at Ammonia.
Right.
In Marrickville. I knew him when I was a fat little boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good athlete, and I know his dad because they're from Marrickville. We spoke the other day, and I said, George, how do you stay at 61 kilos as an amateur, 5 years old? How do you keep that weight? And he goes, I'm bigger than I've ever was, he goes, but because I've got professional people behind me, I have a dietitian, I have a sports coach, I have a boxing coach, everybody specializes. Yeah. And yes, I think he's wonderful for Australia, wonderful for boxing. And I think it was amazing that he came, he beat what everyone thought. You know, everyone thought he was overmatched, and he really won it clearly. Now, his next fight's a real good one, okay, which is in a few weeks at Melbourne. I think he's done great. He's never forgotten his Greek heritage. All his tattoos are Greek, by the way.
He's
heavily tattooed. And he's always got the Greek flag when he fights. He goes, yes, I'm Australian, but I'm Greek as well. He's very proud of that thing. I think it's good for Greeks around the world. And, of course, it's good for boxing.
Do you take to keen interest as well, Costa?
Yeah, look, I'm not as much into boxing as Con is. I'm more into all the other arts, like Muay Thai, kickboxing.
But you didn't know your dad used to drink coffee with this bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have nothing but admiration for George. I think he's a wonderful human being, and I think I did read an article too that not only as a boxer, but as a person, you know, he's come to the aid and defense of many people before. It's nice to see that Hellenic firepower, because in my opinion, I don't think George is the greatest technician, but I think what he has, his desire and his Hellenic flame and spirit to fight is second to none. Yeah. I think it's phenomenal, and he really showed that last time, right? And I think that's what actually won him the fight. But we've got nothing but admiration and respect for George, and hopefully he keeps going. I want to say something too, and it makes us extremely proud for George, but I want to give mention to a few Greeks that I believe that didn't get credit for their input. And please. I think one of the first major combative artists to make Australia and Greece proud, and he doesn't get the recognition that he deserves, is Stan the Man Longinidis.
Mm. Yeah.
All right, Stan the Man Longinidis, what a lot of people don't know, it was denied Australian title shots because he was this wog boy from Melbourne, right?
Yeah.
And he actually went to the United States and trained with one of the guys, I've trained with him a few times, is Master Benny the Jet Akitas, right? Over at the Jet Center there. And he won the North American, he had to win the North American title. And came back to Australia, and they couldn't deny him an Australian title shot. So, and then he won the Australian title, and then he became like 8-time world champion. Mm. Today is one of the biggest motivational speakers around. You know, people don't give Stan the credit that he deserves. And it was Stan that discovered Mike Zambides. If it wasn't for Stan, no one would know who Mike Zambides is.
Yes, that's correct.
And I want to give credit to this gentleman, because I truly believe that people don't give him the recognition he deserves. Mm. He was the first fighter, Greek-Australian fighter ever in the history of combat sports to be inducted in the Australian Sports Hall of Fame.
Wow.
So I love George, and I think I have much respect for him, but I want to pay tribute to Stan, because he's a little bit older than me. I kind of looked up to him as well when I was kickboxing and fighting. Actually, he was fighting Grant Barker and Grant Barker was actually training out of my gym in Kings River at the time in the early 90s. And it was quite interesting at the time. So I had Grant Barker that was training out of my gym, and I was rooting for Stan, who was ended up winning. So, but it's all credit to them.
It's wonderful that we have that sort of lineage.
Definitely.
We have these great names in the sport, which are unheralded, so it's great that you're bringing it up right now. Gentlemen, I think that sort of wraps us up. We really appreciate you guys being here to talk about what is, you know, something that's close to our hearts, a sport that not many Greeks know enough about. thank you so much for bringing your expertise.
Thank you for inviting
enthusiasm.
Us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having us, guys. It was wonderful. Great conversation. We could talk for hours, right?
We could, sure, genuinely.
Sure. I think maybe we need to have an episode 2 sometime soon.
There might be an episode 2. Let's see. Nick, what did you think of that, mate?
That was fantastic. I learned so much about that. I didn't know pancration was such a historical sport and the philosophy side of it all. I didn't know all about that.
Yeah,
so
it was
amazing. Thank you so much, Con, for sharing all that. And Con as well. Look, give your gyms a quick plug, boys. Where can we find you guys? Where can we train?
So my academy is Zeus Academy, Zeus International Martial Arts Academy. We're based in Sydney, Australia, in Marrickville. Mm-hmm. You just look up Zeus Academy. But usually I'm a lot on Instagram as well, under Costa Prasula. So if you want to sort of send a message or reach out, please feel free to do so. I'm happy to, you know, share my insight and say hello to anybody that is out there.
Fantastic.
And for yourself, Con?
Hi, guys. My gym's called the Fight Lab. I don't only just teach pancration or other things there. I'm on Tempe Princess Highway, 914 Princess Highway. Mention the podcast and come and get a free workout.
Fantastic. Oh, there you go. We have our first promotion, Nick.
Yeah, we do. Thank you. So I'm going to have to bring my kids down, Con.
Fantastic. Well, look, gentlemen, thank you very much. If you've got any questions about Bagration or you want to get in touch with these gentlemen here or you've got feedback, feel free to send us an email at uzotalk@outlook.com. Get us on social media at uzotalk and at uzo_talk on Instagram. Nick Athanasiou, thank you very much for being with us again.
Anastasios Kolodikis, it's been a pleasure, mate. I've enjoyed. We're back on the Uzos, the Blumadi. Great conversation. I learned a lot about this. And like Tom said, everyone out there, if you've got any stories, anything you want to share with us about pancration, please reach out to us. We love all your feedback.
Let's go put the boxing gloves on and beat the shit out of each other now.
I think so. I just want to see Con get Tom in this arm lock. Been waiting all night for this. Dear.
Good stuff. All Thanks right, very guys. Much, guys.
Thank you, everyone. Take care.
Ακολουθήστε μας στο Soundees, στο Spotify, στο Apple Podcasts και στο Google Podcasts.